So in my first assignment as a priest, we had a lot of funerals between the pastor and I, about 100 a year, and we would meet with each of the families individually, and we would plan the whole funeral out, and it was pretty quick that I learned that the last question we'd ask, like about when the person was going to be buried, was very telling. And more frequently than I'd like to admit, I got what was very obviously a dishonest answer, that, well, we'll bury so-and-so later. Or sometimes they were honest. Yeah, they wanted to be shot out of a cannon or scattered in a national park or something like that. And it was a little eye-opening to me, both the experience of being lied to as a priest and then also, despite having the truth presented, somebody going, yeah, well, we're going to do it our way. And I was talking about it to my spiritual director, and I said, this is not necessarily what I imagined being a father was like. And he looks at me and kind of gets this bit of a grin on his face, and he goes, well, you skipped right to the point of having adult children. And really, this is what the gospel seems to be getting at today, right? We say, praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ. And this is one of those gospels that it's a little ironic that we seem to do that, because this doesn't strike us initially as good news. In fact, the idea of living in a divided household, a household divided by faith, may in fact be something that is very painful to a number of you. That it's very painful because it seems to be the reality. Then you desperately wish that it wasn't. You wish that there was that unity. You wish that maybe Jesus should have come to establish peace on the earth. So I really want us to spend time with, what is it that this gospel is asking of us? And I think as we spend time with it, we come to see that just as Jeremiah is lifted up out of the mud at the end of the first reading, we also can be lifted out of the mud of our desolation and discouragement at the division that exists in our families and in our world. So there is the very obvious reality of this text that Jesus is demanding something of his followers. In fact, there was a rabbi who was very good friends with Pope Benedict, and in Pope Benedict's Jesus of Nazareth, he says one of the often overlooked claims of divinity that Jesus makes in the gospel, he says, Christians miss this, is this very gospel. Because for Jewish society, the family bond, the bond of the tribe is so precious, is so powerful and important, indeed seems to be blessed by God, that only God himself could say, because of me, this unit will be divided. So Jesus is saying there will come moments where we must be like Jeremiah and face down the people we love, saying, you're demoralizing us. Just let us do what we want. And Jesus knows that that is hard. He knows that that suffering is real. And indeed, this is why the letter to the Hebrews says that Jesus went there first. Jesus went to that place of being mocked and torn down and killed at the hands of sinners, at the hands of those who would resist, who would find a reason not to peacefully receive the gospel, so that we would not be afraid to go there. And in fact, there's that sort of cheeky little line like, hey, you haven't resisted to the point of shedding blood yet. So it helps to put things in the proper spiritual perspective. But there's a subtler reality that's here. Because we can also become consumed with trying to make our family, to make the world, be one in belief in Jesus. And so we want to go back to this idea that only God could be the one to say that this division will exist. Because as foundational as the family is a reflection of the Holy Trinity, and it belongs to God. So, to ask ourselves the question as we think of our adult children, as we think of our grandchildren, as we think of the little kids who are growing up into a world that seems to be increasingly difficult to be a person of faith in, what does that stir up in our heart? No doubt it's going to stir up worry, anxiety, but we want to examine that. Because sometimes what we'll do is we'll go, well, it's an anxiety because of love, and so I just got to live with it. But we don't want to just accept that. We want to test the spirits, including that one. Yes, there can be an anxiety of love, what Jesus speaks about. There is a baptism with which I must be baptized, and how great is my anguish until it is accomplished. Right? This comes from love. He is in anguish wanting salvation to come to those that he loves. But for us who are fallen, it is just as easily to become consumed by the anxiety and to fall into any number of the sinful behaviors that we do when we're anxious. We can try and control things. So we might browbeat those that we love, continually going, you got to go to church, you got to go to church, you got to go to church, you got to go to church. Are you going to go to church today? You got to go to church. And by virtue of our attempts at controlling, turn the person off from faith, because we're not cooperating with God. We're trying to make it happen. Or maybe we don't take such a direct approach, but we internalize it. And so it becomes the only thing that we can think about. And so maybe it's a worry that keeps us up at night or makes us sick to our stomach. Or maybe it makes us bitter, resentful towards the very people that we want to love. Or maybe we become angry. We can't have peaceful dinner, pleasant conversation, but instead treat the faith as always a landmine or volatile topic. Or maybe we are fearful, worrying, what did I do wrong? Or what will I do wrong with my children's life, with my coworkers' lives, with my friends' lives? And so in the face of those things, we do need to ask, well, whose children are these people who are divided? They're God's. Parents, you love your children, but they're God's children first. And he loves them even more than you do, desires their salvation even more than you do. We may love our friends, but they're God's first. Maybe we love our coworkers, but they're God's first too. And if we begin in that place, if we begin with the acknowledgement, God is Lord of our family, of our friends, of my office place, then suddenly I don't find the need to browbeat or to control, to be resentful, to be fearful, because now the responsibility isn't on me. I am collaborating with God. I'm working with him for the salvation of others. And it is primarily his task. I need only be responsive to the fire that he gives to me. So don't hear what I'm not saying, either direction. It is good, necessary, for us to witness and at times even suffer speaking the truth. But also, it is good for us to be able to surrender. Surrender not in some vague way, hoping it'll all work out in the end because everybody's nice, but surrendering it into the hands of God. in whose hands are the hearts of the powerful, as the Psalms say, who is attentive to the cry of the poor, who sees the suffering and pain that results from our family members, our friends, our co-workers suffering from their own separation from him. He sees all of that. And so it's into those hands that we surrender. And if we find that we are consumed with an unholy anxiety, if our habits have become browbeating or angry, if thoughts of our family or friends or coworkers turn us to fear and resentment even towards ourselves for not doing enough, we need to take a step back, because there's a good chance we're going to spoil the work by our own stuff getting in the way rather than letting the Lord be the one to carry out and direct the work. And if we do this, we are then able to come to that peace that Jesus himself experiences. We see that Jesus, in his humanity, seems to always have the right response to what is going on in front of him. He doesn't always bear the fruit of salvation, not because of him, but because of the other person. But that is from that intimate connection with the Father that guides him, that at this moment, I will express my anger and give vent to it. In this moment, I will speak of my anguish. In this moment, I will let this person walk away. In this moment, I will forgive. When we are freed from the pressure of saving others ourselves, which, oh, by the way, we can't do, we then become open to the infinite creativity of God, who in his love seeks the salvation of all and will empower us for that work in any number of ways, because we're now working with him. So may we find today peace, not a false peace, but the true peace that comes from siding with Jesus, who is the King of the universe, the King of our families, the King of our friends, of our workplaces of work, the King of everything. And in that, may that fire consume our hearts, and may we share that fire with others.